A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these organizations. Today, we'll hear from the new executive director of the New Jersey State Council on the Arts, as well as details about the state agency's newly adopted strategic plan. My guest will be Allison Trattner, who was named executive director after spending more than 10 years at the council. She'll talk about the ways the agency hopes to foster greater accessibility and diversity in the state's arts landscape, and also about her thoughts on the power of the arts to inspire and uplift. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The Houston Symphony Orchestra has reached a three-year agreement with its musicians that freezes their salary while providing increases of 4% and 4.1% over the next 2 years as the orchestra works to cut other expenses. The orchestra also said in a statement that musicians who are new parents will receive an additional 2 weeks of sick leave during the first 6 months after a child's birth or adoption. The contract runs through October 3, 2021. In other orchestral negotiations news, musicians of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra have agreed to a 4-month extension of their contract with management while they continue negotiations about the length of the symphony's season. According to the Baltimore Sun, management has proposed cutting the season to 40 weeks, down from the 52-week season that the orchestra has had for 35 years, effectively cutting the player's salary. The Sun reported that the musicians, whose salaries have remained flat for a decade, have argued that such a change would transform what has become a world-class symphony into a part-time regional orchestra. The orchestra's management has said that keeping the current schedule in place is financially unfeasible. Detroit's arts community will benefit from $20 million in funding from the Knight Foundation, including support for a new Sphinx Organization initiative to support leadership development among musicians of color. Sphinx will receive $1.5 million for its Leaders in Excellence Arts and Diversity program, which will serve 10 musicians each year, allowing them to create a growth plan, receive coaching and mentorship, and attend leadership retreats. In a statement, Sphinx said it has named Stanford Thomas, founder and executive director of Play on Philly, as dean of the LEAD program. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. If you're one of the 7.5 million people who take in concerts, exhibits, poetry readings, or other events put on by an arts organization in New Jersey each year, there's a good chance that some of the events you attend are supported in part by the New Jersey State Council on the Arts. Founded in 1966 to support and encourage public interest in the arts, the council awards funding to arts organizations to support operating, program, and special events costs, as well as grants for folk arts apprenticeships and artists in education residencies. Funding comes from the state's hotel-motel occupancy fee, as well as funding allocated from the National Endowment for the Arts. The council typically awards about $16 million in funding to more than 700 organizations statewide. In setting the guidelines for determining how to award these grants, the council relies heavily on input from the public and the state's arts community. This past summer, it wrapped up a 2-year process of drawing up a new 5-year strategic plan, holding public meetings and reaching out to artists, organizations, and the public to find out how best to keep the state's arts community thriving and growing. The resulting document released last month has 5 goals, along with the ways the council will implement, track, and gauge its successes in meeting these goals. The council also just named Allison Trattner as its new executive director. She's been with the council since 2005, including serving as communications director and interim executive director. Trattner has spent her career in the arts, having earned her master's in museum education at the University of the Arts and degrees in arts education and fine arts from Alfred University. I recently spoke with Trattner, as well as with Michelle Baxter Schaefer, the council's program officer. I asked Trattner about the new direction laid out by the strategic plan and what she hoped to accomplish as she takes on leadership of the council.
I have been with this agency for a long time, over a decade now, and I've lived through a bunch of strategic planning processes, and now here, for the first time, I was able to lead a strategic planning process. So that really very well articulates our goals as an agency. So I was able to really have my hands very firmly on the process and to grow with the growth of the plan, if you will. My goals are really, it's really true, they are the same as the agency goals right now, and I'm happy to talk about those if you'd like.
Sure. Let's go over the goals that were just announced. There are five of them. Walk us briefly through the goals and kind of the intent behind them.
To try to give you a sort of a snapshot without reading them to you, because anyone can access the plan online. The first goal speaks to the council's role as a funder. And the goal, simply put, is to strategically support New Jersey artists and arts organizations. All the way through this process, the council has focused on achieving access and equity in grant making, which is no small feat. And within this goal, the actions and the strategies will really all be focusing on that, focusing on a balanced, strategic mode of investment to maintain stability in the field for artists and arts organizations and also encourage innovation. So it's a lofty one, but it's worthy. The second goal speaks to access to quality arts education and lifelong learning. So the council is a firm believer in quality arts experiences having, you know, a really profound impact on all of us from the youngest of ages and all throughout our lives. So this goal speaks to increasing access and trying to ensure participation in meaningful, high-quality arts education experiences throughout our lives, but also especially in schools. The third goal kind of builds on what I was just talking about. It's about access. It's about access for people of all ages, all abilities, and all backgrounds, access to the arts. Under this goal, all the action steps and the strategies will speak to increasing participation in the arts for all people. The next goal speaks to the council's role in creating and strengthening and sustaining thriving communities in the arts. You know, at the State Arts Council, we believe really firmly that we have a central role to play in social initiatives and social change. And so this goal places an emphasis on the council's role in serving communities statewide, especially those traditionally underserved. The fifth goal, simply put, is about advocacy and promotion. Not necessarily marketing and promotion in that sense, but in promoting and advocating about the arts, so that people in all sectors can understand the importance of the arts to our lives.
Looking at these goals, do they in any way represent either changes or new directions for the Arts Council, or is it more a matter of reinforcing past goals and expectations that the Arts Council has striven for?
I would say the answer is both. As I mentioned, I've been with the agency more than a decade, and so having lived through three different planning processes and the implementation of these plans, I can tell you with certainty that there are common threads, and that goes back from before I got here. The agency has had a very clear vision and mission for its 40-plus years, and in this most recent iteration of the plan, I think what is different is how clearly we've articulated some of the priorities that have been there before. So as an example, the council's roles are clearly articulated in this plan, and that wasn't the case in the last go-around. So the council felt it really important to articulate clearly that we're not just a funder. We are primarily a funder, and we are here to financially support artists and arts organizations, but we're also seeing ourselves as an advocate, as a partner, and as a connector. And those leadership roles are critical to, I think, having the impact that we know the arts can have and that the impact that we know a state arts council can have. I think also notably different about this plan or about the direction of the council would be the focus on diversity, access, and equity. Those are not new ideas. They're certainly not new to the council's work. They have been at the core of the council's work for as long as I've been around, and I'm sure longer. But what's different about it this time is that they are at the forefront. Those words, that terminology, that way of thinking is now at the very top of mind in all that we do.
Jumping off what you had just said, you know, we do hear a lot in the arts about access and diversity in the arts. Give us a sense, in the New Jersey context, what are some specifics that you're hoping to address through that? What are some ways that we can think beyond just the word diversity and access? What does that really mean on the ground?
It means a lot of things, practically speaking, and we've got many, many sort of balls in the air at the same time. So really in no order of priority, I can tell you a few of the things that we have going right now. We're about to release our newest grant guidelines. They'll come out the beginning of November. This is a big year for us. Our largest grant programs to our New Jersey Arts Organizations are a three-year cycle. So at the top of every 3 years, all of the organizations apply for funding. They get a commitment for 3 years. And what also happens is the guidelines will be released for our arts project support grants also at the same time, and that's coming up the first week in November. The guidelines that will be released for the fiscal year 2020 round of arts project support grants are one example of how the council is really putting into motion its expressed goal to encourage innovation, hear new voices, and reach new constituencies through the granting and through the grant-making process. In order to try to encourage new applicants and applicants who want to do some more experimental work and potentially really diversify the field and diversify what's out there as far as arts experiences, engaging new audiences, we've changed the guidelines and the eligibility criteria for that one project to see how it goes. So we've removed some of the barriers that were expressed to us throughout our strategic planning process, barriers that include things like proving multi-county access, right? I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but that's one of the things that the council requires, that we've required in other granting programs, to ensure that an organization has multi-county access. Well, with this specific granting program, we're going to remove that requirement in an effort to go local, in an effort for these projects to target different populations that we're maybe not meeting because they are hyper-local. And we found that this could lead to really, it could lead to new work, new audiences, and build on the council's impact.
So then looking, kind of taking a step back then, along with the goals, there are specific indicators you'll be looking for. What are some of the ways that you will be judging and evaluating, you know, how well a job and how well these projects and how well the programs are meeting the goals that you set?
Yeah, you know, measurement of a plan is one of the hardest things because you work really hard to create this rich content that sets out your vision and establishes these lofty goals, and then you've got to do the work. And we were really careful in creating this plan to establish for ourselves a way to measure our progress. You know, these indicators that are available in the plan under each goal, they will help keep us accountable. And I can tell you that what happens after this strategic plan was created and what will happen every single year is the council adopts what we call a program and operational plan, which dives even deeper. So if you think about the strategic plan as the five-year plan, the global view, each year, the operational plan is created to dictate the work of that 1 year in the shadow of the strategic plan. And then drilling down even more deeply, each unit within the council staff creates their own plans based on the strategic plan. So we get really to the nitty-gritty in our planning in hopes that we can hold ourselves accountable and really measure as we go. The other thing I should make clear is that this plan is a living, breathing document, if you will. And, you know, we, in order to get to the place where we did, where we called it final and done, we engaged hundreds of stakeholders, people from the arts sector and outside the arts sector, to develop the plan. And while that feedback process is over, we've made it very clear and we'll continue to make it clear that we want ongoing feedback. We want the kinds of relationships with our partners and with constituents where there's always a sort of two-way communication where they can help us do better what we're trying to do.
Well, if you could just give us a sense of what that process was in terms of reaching out, engaging all these different organizations. How did you go about gathering this information? And what are some of the things that kept coming up? What were these constituents and what was the public interested in reaching through these?
The process was long. It was just under 2 years. It started in October of 2016 where the council began the process with a really deep dive into sort of a self-assessment. They had a facilitated conversation that was focused specifically on access and equity in grant making to try to uncover what it is that our specific challenges are with our current processes, or at the time, our current processes. And then, you know, from there, armed with that information, they had more questions than answers at that point and dove even deeper into a self-assessment to measure ourselves against the plan that we had been operating under at that point. And to understand where we made progress, where we didn't make progress, where we thought that we were going to be successful, but we weren't, and what we now thought we had to do better. So armed with all of that self-assessment data, we took it to the public. The council traveled around the state for the year, five different public feedback sessions, engaging people, like I said, from the arts sector, but also from the non-arts sector. About 300 people attended those meetings over the year and gave us feedback. And we were prepared to facilitate each one of those conversations. Council members of our planning committee, myself included, we were ready to lead those conversations should we need to. But surprisingly, they all turned out very differently from each other, and they were really interesting. So some of the themes that emerged, some of the things that we found out. Arts organizations that came to some of the feedback sessions were really frustrated with not being able to figure out the best and most effective way to measure their audiences. Who's coming? Figure out who their audiences are. How do you collect that data? They want to know who they're reaching so that they know who they're not reaching. And so they look to the State Arts Council and they say, you know, what are the tools that you can provide us as a leader in the field to do a better job at this, because they want to know, and we want them to know. And that's there's no simple solution to that, and that's something that we're working with our partners nationally to try to figure out, because New Jersey faces the same challenges that our arts colleagues face across the country. How are your programs and services most impactful to the broadest audience? And by audience, I mean public. Some of the other conversations that came up during the feedback sessions, which were not always easy, they were, you know, about barriers to access for different cultural populations and diverse cultural populations from around the state. They just didn't see themselves in our programs and services. And those were very interesting, difficult conversations to have and very informative. And we really took them to heart.
How would you describe the scene for the New Jersey arts in terms of the groups that provide arts programming, whether it's performances, visual arts, other types of wide ranges of programs? What does the New Jersey arts community do well, and what are some areas that you feel New Jersey can do a little bit better in?
Oh, man, that is a tough question, because the answer is the New Jersey arts community does so many things well. I would say if I had to describe the New Jersey arts scene, it's nearly impossible to do in one word. It's impossible to do in one word. I'd say it's rich and diverse. It's absolutely true. On the one hand, I can't believe it's true, but it is true that in New Jersey, you can still, in the arts, expect the unexpected, which you may remember that's a slogan that that we use with our partners in Discover Jersey Arts, which is the statewide arts promotional campaign. And it's true. Expect the unexpected. And every corner of the state, no matter what discipline it is you're looking to experience, you're going to find it. I think that there are the arts organizations, north, south, west, east, central, Jersey, all doing high quality, great things. And then there's also a whole scene of emerging artists doing experimental and amazing cutting edge work. It really runs the gamut. And you know, one of the things that our council has focused on for this year moving forward is the folk and traditional artists at work in every corner of the state. New Jersey's diversity is one of our biggest strengths, and there are artists at the heart of these diverse communities really helping to preserve the legacy of these communities through artwork and traditional art forms. And the council has a rich and diverse, to say it again, folk arts program that spans the state. We have folk arts centers in the south and central and northern Jersey. We're in the midst of developing and hopefully opening in the spring a fifth folk arts center. And all of this commitment is because the council believes in the importance of preserving these rich traditional cultures and telling New Jersey stories through the arts. I'll tell you, if you haven't had the opportunity to experience any of the amazing folk life and folk artists at work throughout these communities, you should. It's really, there's some breathtaking work going on around the state. And I guess I should add that if there's one place to go to figure out really what's happening in New Jersey, it's jerseyarts.com, which is the website of Discover Jersey Arts. Jerseyarts.com, if you're not familiar with it, I mean, you can go there to find a calendar of events. You can go there to find a directory of arts organizations and galleries and things that help you figure out what to do. But you can also go find podcasts and go behind the scenes with the video blogs, and you can really hear the stories of New Jersey artists and New Jersey people experiencing New Jersey arts, 24/7.
Well, as you mentioned, the key role, one of the most important roles of the Arts Council is distributing funding through primarily its grants program. Funding is such a key issue, such a critical issue that arts organizations are dealing with now. There's just so much uncertainty, both whether it's coming from the public funding or private funding, and sources are always changing. What are you hearing from arts organizations regarding the funding landscape, and how are some ways that you're encouraging or working with them to find new avenues and to cope with so much of the uncertainty out there?
It's a challenging field. I think it's challenging to be a nonprofit of any sector. I think that in the arts community, at least here in New Jersey, we are one of the most well-resourced as far as state public support for the arts in the country, which is not to say we couldn't always use a little more. But we also receive funds here at the Council from the National Endowment for the Arts, our key partner. Those funds are critical to the work we do here at the State Arts Council, and then the National Endowment for the Arts has also, you know, got an amazing influx of funds directly to New Jersey arts organizations. But as far as helping New Jersey nonprofits diversify their funding sources, which is really critical to their sustainability and to their strength, we work with a service network called the Council of New Jersey Grantmakers. Within the Council of New Jersey Grantmakers, they are a service group that brings together funders of all kinds, grantmakers of all kinds from all sectors. And they have affinity groups, groups where they organize all of the grant makers that come together. So any grant maker out there that's interested in support for the arts, we are networked with them. And so we do see ourselves as kind of an ambassador to bring the great work of the nonprofit arts organizations and the artists in the state to the attention of our peers, our grant-making peers, that's statewide. And so making those connections, making those introductions, and helping to foster those relationships, I mean, that's a role that we play as well.
Well, coming full circle, you've basically made your career in various aspects of the arts and development and support. How did the arts speak to you that have inspired you to make this such a public commitment?
I could go on a long time about that, and it is really very personal and probably a bit too emotional for radio. But even as a young child, the arts for me were a language that I was comfortable using. And I know that the power that the arts gave me as a painfully shy person, as a person coming up with, you know, learning challenges, but exceptional talent, I was able to find my way. And thankfully, I had teachers and mentors who helped to guide me through the world of high school art and college art. And I met my husband in art school. And I truly believe in the importance of being able to express yourself creatively, to be able to problem solve with an open mind. And the arts really do teach you that. But it's not just the instrumental benefits. It's not just being able to learn how to be creative in all its forms. Creating art is, for me, a peaceful, beautiful thing to do. It's something that is important in my everyday life, and it's important for me to make opportunities for my children and my family to create art because of all the reasons I just said and so much more.
Michelle, was there anything you wanted to add in?
Something that just kept coming to mind throughout the conversation is really how we are taking the plan and linking that to everything else we're doing. And as Allison mentioned, the guidelines for our next large grant cycle are coming out next week. And you will see that we've taken what we were hearing from the field and we are putting that into the guidelines. not only so we can be more thoughtful about our roles and our funding, but to help organizations and artists be more thoughtful about what we've been hearing. So we've tweaked the guidelines to speak to those things. And so throughout the granting process, there are all these touch points for us to revisit the strategic plan and see how we're doing, how the field is responding, how the public is responding. We're excited for this next step and to see how the field responds to these. It's going to give us a wealth of information that we can just build on. And as Allison said, this is really a living document that we are always taking feedback on and thinking about and learning from. So we are always open to hearing from anybody in the public, from our grantees. We are here to not only strengthen the arts community in New Jersey, but communities throughout New Jersey. And that's what these arts organizations and these artists are doing. And that's why it's so important for us that we are able to support them, because it's not just about the arts sector. It's about New Jersey as a whole.
For a lot of our listeners and others in the public who themselves may not be active participants in the art-making side, but may attend galleries, performances, how do these goals and strategies translate into what they can experience as the public?
I think that one of the goals within the plan that I know, that I believe, that we will see, you know, real change from is the diversity and access piece. And I know those are just terms, right? Those are words that are thrown around a lot. And the truth is, not everything is for everyone, right? Not everyone enjoys every art form. But it's important that there's an entry point. There's a way into the arts for everyone. If the way that we fund things shifts, if the way arts organizations get sort of technical assistance or professional development from us helps them to reshape their offerings or dive deeper into a conversation they're having through their work, so that they can reach new audiences, so that the things on the stage, on the walls, in the classrooms, speak to people from all backgrounds, so that we can address the barriers we know are there for people looking, you know, looking in the window and not seeing themselves in the conversation on the stage, on the walls, in the classroom. They don't believe the arts are for them, and that's just not true. And so I think one of the most amazing things that we can do through this plan, through our partners, through the arts organizations and the artists who are working really hard every day, I think that we can continue to listen and continue to address these barriers. There needs to be an entry point for everyone, no matter where you're coming from. You need to be able to see yourself experience, because it could change your life.
That was Allison Trattner, who last month was named Executive Director of the New Jersey State Council on the Arts. We also heard from Michelle Baxter Schaefer, the council's program officer. More information on the council, including details of its strategic plan and funding opportunities, can be found at nj.gov/state/NJSCA. I hope you enjoy these conversations I bring you each week on Otempo, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like Otempo are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to Otempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. Otempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.